Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Yes, everybody, welcome back to the show. I've been asking for some feedback recently from the people around me, and my own mother said I sound dehydrated at times. So I've been drinking some more water, and thank you for that, Mom. I appreciate it. But if you want to give me some feedback as well, rate the podcast on its podcast pages, subscribe to me on YouTube at Rishi Karada, and follow me on Instagram where you can reach out at Rishi Karada again. So with that being said, let me introduce today's guest. Today we have Mr. Ryan Farber. Ryan is a qualified personal trainer and advanced strength and conditioning coach with an impressive portfolio of clients ranging from competitive athletes to professionals. Having served in the British Army, Ryan is a qualified British military fitness instructor and continues to teach military fitness. Currently, Ryan is employed as a paramedic and also is a member of the Specialist Operations Response Team, which responds to terrorism-related incidents. Outside of work, Ryan is a health and fitness enthusiast, enjoying competitive long-distance running, as well as being a keen and adventurous mountaineer. Why are fit people often more successful? In today's episode, we dive into Ryan's journey, including his time in the military and how fitness has shaped his mindset and approach to life. We'll explore the link between physical health and long-term success, why consistent exercise is crucial for a long life, and how to stay disciplined even when the motivation fades away. Ryan shares his insights on creating sustainable gym routines, building discipline through structure, and the life lessons he learned from his military experience. Join us today for practical advice on making fitness a cornerstone of your success and striving for excellence through exercise. So, with that being said, please help me welcome Mr. Ryan Farber. You recently went on a trip mountaineering in the Alps. You sent me some cool photos. How was that?
Yeah, I mean, I love being in the outdoors. I was very blessed to travel with a friend to the French Alps, a town called Chamonix, which is famous for skiing. And we climbed the glacier there. We did some ice climbing, we did some hiking, we did some mountaineering, all in preparation, hopefully for around this time next year, maybe a little bit earlier, we're going to try and summit Mont Blanc, which is a big challenge. It's a dangerous mountain. And so we're going to be prepping hard for the next 8 or 9 months to try and get up there and get that done.
Where's that?
It's also in the Chamonix region. Okay. It's the highest peak in the Chamonix region, the French Alps there. It's a difficult mountain. It's quite hazardous. There's lots of rope work, lots of skills, and you need to be up there with a guide. Hopefully we'll make it up, and even more hopefully we'll make it down.
Damn. I mean, for as long as I've known you, and I think I've known you for what, 6 years, more than 6 years now.
Yeah.
You have constantly been challenging yourself physically.
Yeah.
Is that a theme that you like to keep in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love doing anything that makes me sweat. If it gets my heart rate up and it makes me sweat and I can't speak, then I'm in a good place. And I find that generally that is the answer to a lot of life's challenges. Keep fit, keep pushing yourself, and you'll be amazed what you can achieve. Mm. And actually, achievement is a wonderful thing to flourish in that environment, pushing yourself to new boundaries and just looking back and thinking, I can't believe I actually just did that.
Mm. How has it impacted you?
I think as I've got older, I've become even more adventurous, actually. I've not let age become a limiting factor. It's something that's encouraged me to go out and try new things. So ice climbing is not something that I was doing when I was your age, particularly. I definitely wasn't doing it in my 30s, but now I'm in my 40s. I'm out there with a backpack on, ropes, ice axe, crampons, climbing mountains. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing, right?
You work with clients of all ages and of all sizes.
Yeah.
And it's particularly physical fitness that you like to endorse.
Yep.
Why is it so important? Why is physical fitness so important at all ages? How can it help us wherever we are in our lives?
I think my perspective on fitness is that people who train and train regularly tend to be successful.
Okay.
Now, I don't necessarily mean success is measured purely by your bank balance.
Yeah.
Because I've trained people that are not what we would call super wealthy, but they're very successful in their field. They might be garbage collectors, but I guarantee you that they'll be the best garbage collectors, if that makes sense.
Also,
that they'll be the hardest working. They'll empty the most garbage cans. They'll finish the shift on time every day. They'll be there early to start the shift. They'll have that kind of drive and motivation to do the very best job possible. And in some circumstances in life, that will translate into other forms of success, financial, family, rec time, all those other things. One of the things that I first noticed when I started working in public gyms, which I no longer do, as you know, was you would see the same crowd in the morning, the 6 o'clock crowd. Mm. And when I first started PTing, the 6 o'clock slot was actually the easiest to fill. It was the one that where there was the most demand. I could fill a 6 o'clock slot every morning without even blinking. And but in the gym, I noticed that I was seeing the same faces every single morning, arriving at 5 to 6, stood there waiting for the gym to open, and then off they'd go training. And then you think, well, wow, that's pretty cool. He's in here every day. And then the next day, the same person would turn up and you'd be like, wow, she's in here every day as well. And you get talking to these people and all of a sudden you start to notice a trend that they're committed to a daily routine. They're committed to physical exercise. And then when you explore their lives a little bit more, you realize that actually these are pretty successful people. They're people that have all got busy lives, working in different sectors. And I reached another conclusion. They don't make excuses. There's no excuses in these people's lives. They'll be in the gym. If their commitment is 3 days a week, they'll be there 3 days a week. If they want to commit to 4, 5, 6 days a week, that's how many times they'll be there. And these people generally don't find reasons to change their routine. They just stick to it. And I noticed in my own client portfolio, the ones that have stuck with me for the longest, some clients have been with me now for well over a decade. Maybe even approaching 15 years in some cases, the ones that are driven by routine are the ones that always end up being most successful. And I'm not necessarily talking weight gain or weight loss or having specific goals, but just the most successful in achieving their potential. So routine is the thing that I think is one of the big limiting factors that relates to people's physical success. And as a result of that, often leads to other successes in life. People who can find a routine, a lane that works for them, and stick to it.
When you say you notice certain characteristics in the successful people that you've worked with,
yeah.
Is it more about consistency or is it how hardworking they are in the gym? What is it?
I think there are two things. Consistency is definitely the key.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the pivotal point for most people that I have an absolute pleasure working with. And I notice in their professional lives, they tend to do really well. I've got one client at the moment who's a barrister. He's a professor of law at a very well-known university. And he trains with me 3 times a week, every week. There's no excuses. Mm. It just keeps that consistency going. So that's certainly one element of success, routine and consistency. The second element is something which I picked up on inadvertently in my own kind of training. And there's a wonderful book. I can't quite remember the author, but you may have heard of it. It's called Atomic Habits.
James Clear.
Yeah. It's such a simple concept, really. The whole book is based on such a very simple concept, but it works so well in many areas of your life. But particularly, of course, training, wanting to be the best that you can be in terms of weightlifting or cardio or whatever it is you choose to be, just those small little changes every week. So what I try to do when I'm programming for clients is they have to see some reward. They have to see some success. And in clients who want to lose weight, that's really easy, right? Because every week, if they weigh themselves and they're losing weight, they're going to be happy. But for clients who don't want to lose weight, it's a different challenge, because you have to find some metrics that's going to make them feel that the pain is worth the reward.
Mm.
And in my world, the pain can be physical.
Yeah.
It can be financial. It can be time. There's lots of things that people have to give up to come and train in the gym. So they have to get something out of it. And for most people who don't have a specific weight goal to achieve, that comes through fitness. Mm. If they start to feel like, gee, this week, you know, it's the first week in my life where I've noticed I can run up and down the stairs at work and I don't get out of breath, or I can go with my partner to the supermarket and carry 8 bags of groceries home and not struggle. You know, these little gains in life all of a sudden become measurable and achievable. So I link kind of atomic habits, those little small gains, to smart goals. Every month, what are our goals going to be? What can we achieve? And are we going to be able to get there in that time frame? And I found that with consistency, that big picture works really, really well.
Yeah, James Clear talks about, and it's exactly what you've just said, it's the 1% gains then accumulate over a long period of time to the 100% performance. You talked about the fact that it's hard to show people results, for example, when people are not trying to lose weight, and you use different metrics. What are those metrics?
So actually, the client that I just mentioned to you, who's a barrister, a professor of law, he's a 55-year-old guy, so he's middle-aged, we'd say. Mm. He has a specific problem that means that he can't run or can't jump. And his original goal was to lose weight, and he achieved his goal probably about a year or two ago. And now his goal has been to improve fitness. And trying to improve fitness in somebody who can't run, they can't jump, some things, has actually been a bit of a challenge. And we looked at different forms of exercise that he enjoys that could still challenge him. And the one that I came up was hill sprints, but walking.
Okay.
And we started with a 6-minute walk where he would do 1 minute at 10% gradient and then 1 minute on the flat. 1 minute 10%, 1 minute flat. 1 minute 10%, 1 minute flat at around 4 miles an hour, so about 6 kilometers an hour. And for the first month, I'd say, he really struggled to even do those 1 minute little sessions. And now, 6 months later, 8 months later, he's walking for 10 minutes consistently at a 10% gradient at 4 miles an hour. I challenge any of you on this podcast to go to a gym, set the gradient at 10%, set it at 4 miles an hour, and try and walk for 10 minutes.
No chance.
It is a real, real challenge. So there's everybody can find something that works for them, right? And that's one that's worked really, really well with us at the moment.
I haven't done cardio in about a year and a half. I think Ryan's going to kill me if I tell him that. And
yeah, burpees now.
Yeah, mate. Go. I remember, I think the last time I trained cardio with you, I threw up in the gym. I don't know if you remember when we were on the treadmill. I think the biggest thing with the gym is, I like to call it the honeymoon period, right? Because when you get into the gym, you make the baby gains.
Yeah.
You get so excited. And I'm kind of feeling it now because I've been properly training strength for 2 years, I'd say. And in my first year, I was flying through weights. Like, you go up a weight almost every week.
Yeah.
Bench press, you go up by 5 kg a week.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm in that annoying period where I'm making, maybe I'm going up in weight once every like 3-4 weeks, a month even. It's so hard. And obviously, I'm still doing it, but it's so hard to stay consistent when you're at a point when results aren't showing. Do you think that is where people tend to give up?
Well, it certainly is a weak spot.
Yeah.
It's definitely a vulnerability, let's call it. If people's weight goal is to get to 85 kilos, I guarantee that when they get to either 84 or 86, depending on which way they're going, whether they're going up or going down, they hit a real mental barrier, because you're either almost there or you're almost there. I've done it now. And this goes back to the first part of the jigsaw, which we talked about earlier, consistency. You have to make that commitment that this is part of your life. It doesn't have to be gym. It doesn't have to be running. It doesn't have to be cycling. But some form of activity that you know is, this is my this is my space. This is my time for me, my body, to get out there and do it. In my case, it's running. I do a lot of running, but I also spend a lot of time in the mountains now. I'm probably in the mountains every 10 to 12 weeks doing something different. And that's my commitment to me. The kind of current work pattern in London is hectic. So I have to have those little things in the diary every couple of months to look forward to get out there and to do something different.
This jigsaw, what other pieces are there?
Nutrition, obviously, is something that I'm extremely passionate about. It's so easy to eat well, and it's so easy to eat badly. Mm. You simply have a choice when you get to the end of the road. Are you going to hang a right or are you going to hang a left? And again, that forms from consistency. I've reached the conclusion that in life, most people are addicts in some way or another.
All right.
Most people get addicted to something. It could be good, it could be bad. That's a choice that people will make at some point. And I found that if you can encourage people to get addicted to the good things and understand the benefits of them, it's much easier to follow through. Now, the other thing that's really interesting about addicts is addicts are generally very good with black or white. Mm. They're not good with grey. So if you give people too much free choice, the human brain will give you the opportunity to make a bad choice. So one of the clients that I'm working with at the moment had a real issue with sugar. It was just his crutch when he was having a good day. He'd want to celebrate with some sugar. When he was having a bad day, he'd want to commiserate with some sugar. If he was just having a normal day, well, he'd just have some sugar because it was a normal day. And he really struggled to break the cycle of sugar and didn't really appreciate how damaging that kind of lifestyle, that nutritional choice was for him. But we identified through some of his other behaviours in life that he did have an addictive personality. It was a very all or nothing kind of person. And as soon as he said, you know, I'm a very all or nothing kind of person, we had this light bulb moment. Well, if you're an all or nothing kind of person, then it's nothing.
Mm.
If sugar's bad for you, then it's a nothing.
Mm.
And he looked at me with this huge sense of horror, like, what, you're asking me to give up on my one fail-safe pleasure in life. You're asking me to give up on it forever. And I said, well, let's not worry about forever. Let's just worry about today, which is an age-old principle that lots of psychologists and addiction therapists used just for today. Let's just get through today. And we started this journey. And actually, as we sit here today, it's a monumental day for me because this client has done 365 days today
of year.
Zero sugar.
That's unbelievable.
And zero bread. So he has abstained from zero sugar, so no processed food. No chocolate, no candy, no bakery, no bread. And he says he is in the best shape of his life. He is mentally the strongest person he has ever been. Mm. A super successful guy, by the way. Because he's done something which he never thought he could achieve. And we can all do that, right? I'm not saying it's easy, but it's a choice. There's lots of things that we can choose to do. You can choose to go to the gym today and say, I'm going to do 100 burpees.
Mm.
And I guarantee you will do it if you really want to do it. But equally, I will guarantee that you won't do it if you've already made the mind up that you're not going to do it. So for him, it was one day at a time. And once he got a week under his belt, it was like, wow, I've actually done a week with no sugar. And then it was 2 weeks. And then it was a month. And every time it was just about pushing those SMART goals a little bit further. So when you're asking about your training, the gains are little. They're not little, are they, really? If you look at them in the quantum of what you've achieved over, let's say, the last 12 months, your gains are still massive. But are your SMART goals realistic? Is it realistic to say that you can still bench press an extra 5 every week?
Mm.
Probably not, right? But is bench pressing an additional one every week realistic? Well, at the end of the year, if you maintain that logic, you'd be sticking out an extra 50 kilos, right?
So it's about expanding the time frame.
Time frame.
Mm, that's fascinating. And then when you pointed out that this client of yours is successful, are you drawing the correlation between making hard choices and success? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
How so?
So I have other clients who are arguably financially more successful.
Yeah.
But in my view, are less successful people because they don't make those hard choices. And what I mean by that is they might be the clients who would be more inclined to cancel last minute. They might be the clients who make worse food choices, but I'll still see them once a week as their kind of token gesture. But they're not prepared to make that hard choice. So yes, while they've been successful in business or in finance or whatever industry they work in, are they truly being successful? Are they maximizing all that life has to offer for them in terms of spending time with their family, exercising, eating well? And you can see the difference. You can see the difference in the two bubbles that those type of clients live in. So client A, on the one hand, makes those hard choices, has sacrificed sugar, has sacrificed bread, still lives an amazingly beautiful, abundant life, still eats out three or four times a week in great restaurants and travels six times a year and does all the things that we would all want to do, but he's made some hard choices. And those hard choices are going to pay dividend, right? Because he's going to live longer, live healthier, be able to look after his family better, enjoy that time. As you know, my other kind of career avenue is that I'm a paramedic with the London Ambulance Service. And one of the things that I can share with you, the most noticeable story that I see, is the difference in the 80 plus category. So those patients who are over 80 years old, and I think we all agree that we'd like to live to a long and healthy life. And one of the things I notice is that the deck of cards that people are dealt is clearly not always as we would wish. Some Random. People are dealt, you know, a deck of cards that means they end up with disease or injury, and that's life. But for the large part, you are the master or mistress of your own destiny when it comes to that deck of cards. You can influence the probability of getting a good hand or a bad hand. And in London, there is this amazing tapestry of patients who are over the age of 80 years old, some of whom over 90, and many of whom I still see now that are over 100 years old. Can you imagine being 100 years old, still living in your own home, being able to walk to the shops and do your own grocery shopping and going home to sit on the sofa and watch a movie with your wife at night? Mm. I mean, how amazing is that? And yet I'll visit some 75, 80-year-olds, sometimes even younger, sadly, 60-year-olds, who are living at home in a hospital bed with a full-time carer. You know, they're not able to mobilise, they're not able to get out, they're not able to enjoy what life is all about. And the biggest single thing that I would say seems to affect people in a non-scientific just observation is exercise and nutrition. I've definitely seen a gentleman who caught my attention not so long ago, who was in his 90s, an Indian chap who eats a vegetarian diet and has done all his life, doesn't drink alcohol and swims for 40 minutes every day. And this chap looked like he was about 60 years old. I mean, he was absolutely amazing. And that story is not uncommon, but you will not go to these patients in this kind of age category who ate McDonald's twice a week or three times a week, never did any exercise, smoked on a Saturday night and drank alcohol every day. They just don't exist. I mean, of course, you will find the 1 in 1,000 or 2 in 1,000 that have beaten the odds. But I told you before, you can influence the odds that you're dealt, but it's not completely in your hands.
But how do you convince yourself that the long term is better than the short term? Because I asked my mate Flint on the first episode, can I not make the argument now that I'm enjoying myself now and they're enjoying themselves later in life? Are we not just enjoying the same amount of time, but just in different periods of our lives? Why is it important to convince ourselves that the later part of our life is more important to enjoy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if you spent a day with me out on the road and you saw what a bad later life looked like, you would flick that switch instantly. You would think that I do not want to reach the age of 60 years old and end up like that. Now, the shock and awe tactic doesn't work for everybody, right? Because a lot of people still smoke cigarettes. And on the back of every packet of cigarettes in this country, there's a disgusting picture of what lung cancer looks like, or mouth cancer or something. And people still buy the cigarettes. So, but that goes down to free will and free choice, right? Some people are prepared to look at that broader picture. But I would ask you this question. What is it that you feel you're sacrificing now in terms of using your time now or later in life? Is there something that you're in theory being asked to do that's so terrible that you feel like you're really losing out? Because nobody's saying don't eat McDonald's, right? Mm. We're just saying don't eat McDonald's 3, 4, 5 times a week for breakfast every day.
Well, an hour of gym, like, look, I love it now, but you got me into that. An hour of gym, especially when we started, as much as I loved it, I'm not going to say that, oh, if Ryan asked me to go play a game of FIFA, I'm not picking that. But an hour of gym, there is still something that I would prefer to do. I still do it now. Mm-hmm. But if you're asking me if it's my top choice, if I'm motivated every day when I wake up in the morning, do I really want to be there right when I'm getting up? Not really. I go anyway. But in terms of sacrifice, that is the sacrifice I feel like I'm making.
And that's a fair point. That's a fair point. I mean, I'm sure some people wake up every day and think, well, I really don't want to brush my teeth, right? But we brush our teeth because we know it's good for us to have a full set of teeth when we're older in life, right? And I accept that not everybody is as crazy as me in terms of loves exercise. Like, if I wasn't here now on a day like today in London, I'd be on Hampstead Heath going for a run. I love it. But I accept that that's not for everybody. I also accept that everybody has different, fantasies when it comes to exercise and things like, as you well know, I'm not a big footballer. And there are other people that would love to go and kick a ball around. What I'm saying is, it's all about balance, right? Mm. You've got to find that balance. And the people who I judge as successful are the ones who have found a good balance in life. But that does involve some hard choices.
Go on, you said something interesting earlier. You said you have some clients that are more financially successful, but you don't deem them as more successful people than some of your clients. Where is the distinction?
So I have one family of clients that involves the parents and the kids. So I let's call it the family. And this family, I would say, are very successful financially. And so that is not their issue in life. But whenever you go to that, train that family, the parents are not, they're not at one with life. They're always super stressed. They don't have time to go for a family meal together. The fact that they squeeze one exercise session in as a family once every fortnight is their kind of mitigation, which is not really achieving a lot. They recently went on holiday and the parents are unable just to put the laptop down for a day. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't work hard. And I'm not saying that some people who own their own businesses don't have to work when they go on holiday. Many of us have experienced that or will experience that. But what I am saying is, if life is so challenging that you can't go for a family meal once a week and you can't go for a family holiday once a year and you can't go to the gym for 30 minutes a couple of times a week, especially if the gym is in your own home, then what's it all for? Mm. You're going to grow old, very wealthy with a big bank balance, and you'll probably be in that 60 to 70 year old category that I talked about that's not going to be able to enjoy life. So I don't think that I don't see those people as successful. Okay, so I often wonder whether there's a cultural disparity between those patients who I come across who've ended up being reliant on the welfare state and those that haven't.
How so?
It seems to me that we go to lots of multi-occupancy homes where there are maybe 2 or 3 generations of people living in the same home, and the problem started with the parents, and it's just generationally passed down. And that problem, as I see it, is exercise, it's nutrition, it's doing the things that are good for you that don't cost any money. And I just don't believe there's an argument that says, it's cheaper to buy fast food. I think that probably is true. When you look at some of the marketing campaigns of McDonald's and Burger King and KFC, you know, they've got cheap deals out there where people can go and eat for £5. But equally, if you go and scour the supermarkets, I know that you can buy 2 kilos of frozen broccoli for £1, and you can buy some cheaper cuts of meat or chicken or fish. So it is possible to do it, but you have to have been trained to do that by somebody, right? And if you're not in the fortunate position that you've got a personal trainer or a fitness coach, or you're in a school system that encourages that, then that training has to come from your parents. And if your parents don't know that, then how are they going to pass it down? So we go to these homes where there's the grandparents, the parents, and then the subsequent children, none of whom are working, all of whom are reliant on the welfare state, none of whom do any regular exercise, none of whom know how to cook or prepare food. And so my message to you, as you're sat at home listening to this podcast, is ask yourself not only what can you do for yourself, but what message are you sending to your friends, your family, your siblings, your parents? I mean, I still think that I'm teaching my parents a thing or two, you know, now. And my dad used to come home from work, a reasonably successful businessman, and he used to have one beer every night. And he never, ever thought that that was potentially a problem or a bad habit. It's just one beer every night. Certainly not somebody who was dependent on the beer, but just had a beer every night. And now, 3 years down the line, after I've explained to him that that's actually not a good habit to have, and he just stopped. He just said, fine, if it's not a good habit, I'll drink something else then. So he drinks, you know, water or something else. And a couple of years down the line, you know, he's lost 6 kilos in weight just by stopping drinking one beer every night.
But like you said, in your view, everyone has a certain deck of cards that they've been dealt.
Yeah.
And it's in our willpower to decide how we use these cards. We have influence over them. Mm-hmm. So regardless, and obviously our parental influence has a big impact on us, mm-hmm. no doubt. And maybe that is actually the influence they have on our deck of cards. But at the end of the day, we still have to find the motivation to alter and influence these deck of cards that we have, like you said. But as a trainer, it's not your job to actually motivate these clients, right? Because they've got to find it within themselves. How can we find motivation? Because I feel like, for example, I still go to the gym when I'm not motivated to go to the gym in the morning. Mm-hmm. Is it motivation? How do we create discipline? What is it?
Well, I think there are two elements. One, which is one that the military heavily rely on, is routine. Find a routine that works for you and stick to it. And you're right, there'll be days where you do not want to get up and put your trainers on and go for a run at 5 a.m. But if that becomes your routine, it's much easier to stick to, okay? People who form routines are more likely to achieve their goals than those that don't. That's a statistical fact and an observation from me. There are some clients that I have that I call them the pay-to-play clients. They really struggle with motivation. They really struggle with routine. They are physically more than capable of going to the gym or to the park or to do the exercises that are good for them, but they just struggle with it. So they say, I'm really struggling with motivation. I really struggle with routine. I really struggle with sticking at things. So I'm going to pay for that privilege. So I'm going to hire a PT. I'm going to commit to doing 2 sessions a week, and I'm going to pay for the 50 sessions up front. So that's half a year. And those clients who've made that commitment and that pledge will stick at it. They sometimes turn up kicking and screaming with a face that is one that is not one of happiness and joy, as you've said. But they still turn up. They still do it. And what they find is that, you know, 6 months down the line, just turning up twice a week actually becomes a lot easier. When you say it's not my job to make them motivated, I think that is part of my job. Yeah. Either by creating a training space where they're achieving their goals, they're seeing some gains, they're seeing some benefits, or by creating a training space where you can just have fun, right? We can just, I mean, there are lots of sessions we did where we achieved a lot, but we still had a good time. We still chatted about whatever we chatted about, and you walked away from it thinking, bloody hell, that was a hard session, or that was a tricky session, or I really didn't want to do it today, but actually I feel pretty good now. Most people who train for an hour leave there feeling pretty good. And I try and remind everybody of that. However much it hurts, however much you don't want to be here, in 58 minutes, you're going to feel amazing. And then at 25 past the hour, I'll say you've got 24 minutes to go, you're going to feel amazing. And you're just re-inputting positive reinforcement. If you're the kind of individual that can do that for yourself, that's a great skill to have. You know, at the end of a really terrible day, it's very easy to put your head on the pillow and go, today has been a shit day.
Mm.
But it's a real challenge. It's a real discipline to be able to put your head on the pillow and say, today was a really tricky day, but actually what I achieved was A, B and C. And that's a completely different mindset, and one which you'll find will help you through those darker days, those ones where training is hard. You shouldn't be going to bed thinking, I only managed to improve my bench press by 1 kilo. What you should be saying is, this week has been a victory. I have managed not to go backwards on my bench press. I've managed to stay the same, or I've managed to increase by a kilo. That's a completely different mindset. Always look for the positives in what you've achieved.
Well, that's where the motivation, I think, comes from. You've just said it. Like I said before, when I was talking about, do I want to go to the gym or do I want to play a game of FIFA? It's the fact that after I go to the gym, I know that I'm going to be feeling good.
Yeah.
But after playing that game of FIFA, even though maybe I won that game of FIFA, I've killed some random kid.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be feeling great about myself. When I get up now, because of how my schedule works in university, I have to get up around 5:45, 5:45. Just go to the gym because the gym's about 25 minutes away. Uh-huh. There's a day when I remember particularly, it was a month after I got into that routine. And it actually really helped that for the years before I was with you at 6 a.m. for a lot of my sessions.
Yeah.
It got ingrained. I got up and I was just like, there's no chance. No chance I'm going. But I told myself, I can either sleep in for 2 hours. And I know after those 2 hours, I'm going to be killing myself for the next 8 hours that I didn't go.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after I made that 25-minute trek to the gym, I don't even know what it is, if it's a dopamine release, and I'm pretty sure it must be, because when we move, we're biologically wired to move, so we release positive hormones.
Yep.
It was like a massive relief, like a weight off my shoulders that I actually went, and I knew that I'd be carrying that weight for the rest of the day if I didn't go.
Yeah, but not only would you be carrying a bad weight if you didn't go, but you're then carrying a positive weight by going, right?
Yeah.
You know that the next 8 hours of your day are going to be better than had you not have been to the gym. One of the things that I try to do myself and encourage people is set yourself up for success. So 6 months ago, I'd been working in central London for the ambulance service in a station that wasn't too near my home. It was a little bit more difficult to get to. And I noticed that my exercise levels were not where I want them to be. Most people would say that I'm a bit mad and train a bit too much, but I felt like I wasn't doing as much as I should be and I wanted to be doing. And so I made a change. I said, right, I'm going to speak to my bosses and I'm going to move station. I'm going to move to one that's nearer where I live on the other side of Hampstead Heath. And therefore, every day when I go to work, I can run to work and I can run home. So you just make some little changes in your life that'll set yourself up for success. If you know you've got deadlines to meet, don't leave it till the morning. Do it the night before and then your morning's going to be free. You know, there's little things that one can do to optimize success. And life is not a continuous trajectory of success. There are going to be flat lines. There are going to be downslopes. Those people that do well are the ones that can snap out of that, can readjust, can realign, can make changes that they need to make. I always find another simple tip for nutrition. I always make sure that I've got enough stuff in the freezer, frozen vegetables, frozen chicken, this, that, and the other, that there's never an excuse that I've got nothing in the house that I need to hit the Deliveroo or the Uber Eats and make a bad choice. Because my personal psychology is, if I'm left with too much of a choice, I'm pretty good at making a bad one. So I try to stay in my lane of having the right choices, putting myself in the right position to get where I want to be.
And the right choices are usually the hardest to make. So do you recommend kind of getting them away at getting them out the way as fast as possible? Because, for example, you said earlier that your 6 a.m. slots at the gym were usually the ones that were highest in demand. And what for me, I've noticed is, for example, if I have a class in the morning, no matter what, the gym has to be the first thing, because I know after that class, I'm not going to be motivated.
Yeah.
And I feel like as people, we only have a certain amount of motivation per day. Let's say it's 100 points of motivation.
Yeah.
Each action that we take eventually drains a certain amount of points per motivation. And for me personally, what I've noticed is the gym takes the most amount of motivation. So I like to just chuck that in right in the beginning, right when I wake up. But I don't know how it works.
Well, it's interesting that you say that each task in life drains a point of motivation.
Yeah.
Look at it from a different way. What about each task does require some motivation, but also puts something back in the tank?
Explain that. Go on.
So if going to the gym requires 5 units of motivation, but actually what you get out of it is 6 units, then you're 1 unit net up, right, by the end of your gym session. I accept what you've said, that most people, most of my clients who do really well holistically, job, family, train in the mornings. And I think that's because there's one or two exceptions, but I think that's because most people, by the time they get to the end of the working day, are physically tired and don't feel like they can commit themselves to a further task that's going to take some more out of the tank. That being said, if you go to some of the, you know, the decent higher end gyms, I'm sure even the budget gyms in New York or wherever you're at, you hit that gym at 6 o'clock in the evening and see if you can find a bench to work on. It's difficult, right?
Packed.
There are people that are there, and that slot is probably busier than the very morning slot. But there are a lot of people, including myself, who make that conscious choice. Let's get it done in the morning. Let's get it out the way. It is part of the routine. And then I can have my evenings to go for some dinner, to play FIFA or to do it, because I've already ticked the box on one of the essentials.
I will also say I'm extremely envious of people who are able to show up at 6 p.m. after their 9-to-5 job, because it takes a lot of motivation at that point as well. Like, I'm a university kid. I understand that all I have is time, right?
Yeah.
But when I see people come in at 6 p.m. and I can tell they're master's students with a part-time job, I'm looking at them like, wow. Like, even though there's this nice feeling about me coming in the morning and I'm like, yes, like, I've beaten everyone to the gym first thing in the morning, it takes a certain amount of motivation to go, my job is done, my work is done, I still need to go to the gym. That takes a lot.
It really is. I think it's a chore. I would always, if I'm booking a session to go with a friend or do something, my preference is always try and get it out of the way in the morning. That being said, I've got a friend who I run with regularly. He's a busy chap. He's got 2 kids, works for a big management consultancy firm. You will not see him for dust in the morning. Like, I've said to him, you know, we can run at 7 a.m. That's not even early. You can be done by 7:30 and have the kids in school for 8:15. And he's like, dude, it's not happening. I am not leaving my bed 1 minute earlier in the morning than I absolutely need to. But if I ask him, do you want to hook up at 7 o'clock at night? He's in all day long. 7 o'clock at night, I'll see you there.
And it's the consistency that shows success.
Yeah. And so I don't think it's a matter of, I don't think it's a problem as to which choice you make, morning or evenings, or just make a choice and stick with it, roll with it.
Mm. You were in the military, in the army.
I was.
How was that?
You know, it definitely was a good time for me. It's a difficult job, you know, and the world is a scary place right now. It's been a scary place for as long as I've been around. But what I did benefit from my time in the military was this concept that I keep talking about routine, about balance. You know, military boys work hard, they play hard as well. We train hard, everything is routine driven. And I still polish my boots now every single day before I go to work. That's not because I particularly get some weird gratification from polishing my boots every day. It's a bit of a task, it's a bit of a chore, but I just find that routine has stuck with me. And I think it's a good routine. I think it's good to turn up to work and looking smart, especially when you're looking after people, right? So it was a good time of my life. Do I regret leaving? I've had a wonderful life since I left the military, so I don't think I regret leaving, but I did very much enjoy it there. It's a difficult job if you've got family and, you know, people who worry about you. It's not an easy job. But for those of you who don't know what you want to do with your lives, the military especially for people who might be listening to this podcast or at university, good universities, the military will offer you a wonderful life, but they'll take a lot from you as well.
Why did you just ask yourself whether you regret?
Because the military life offers you a lot of wonderful benefits, right? You've got a really close group of friends. There are very few jobs in the world where you will eat, sleep, drink, do your work, rec time, work time, everything with such a close group of men and women. And so you form bonds that are, there was a bit of a Freudian slip there, wasn't there? You'll form bonds that are very difficult to make anywhere else in the world in kind of civilian life. And you won't come across many people who've been in the military and left who say that they don't miss that. Do I miss the fact that I had a job that was almost exclusively physical? And, you know, trained, you're like, you're getting paid to train and you're getting paid to feed and you're getting paid to look after yourself. Yeah, that was great. But that's only half the side of the coin, right? The other side of the coin is that it's a difficult job in a challenging world. And in some particular trades of the military, depending what you do, can be extremely dangerous. But I know a lot of people that just didn't know what they wanted to do when they were at uni or didn't know what they wanted to do at school. And they knew that they enjoyed the outdoors. The British Army offers loads of kind of adventure opportunities as well as doing your core job. And so I've got one friend who I was at university with, and she stayed in the military. She's still in now. She's very senior. And she currently lives at a diplomatic residence in the South Pacific as a military advisor to an ambassador. So got an absolute, had an amazing career. She's got two kids. She's got a partner, three kids, I beg your pardon. And so she's made it work, but a lot of people find it difficult to make it work long term. And when you get to about the age of 30, you kind of face a decision. Am I going to leave at an age where I'm young enough to go and do something else with my life? Or am I going to sign the papers and stay in and just succumb to the fact that this will be my problem with the career for the rest of my life?
Is that where you think you've learned the power of discipline and routine?
Yeah, 100%.
How so, discipline?
You know, when you start off in the military, you learn that the easiest way, the least path of resistance is to learn to do it for yourself before somebody starts barking at you. So if you cannot be bothered with somebody screaming and shouting at you at some ungodly hour to do something that you're going to have to do anyway, then just do it.
There seems to be a story behind that. Go on.
Well, if you go right back to like recruit training school, and I'm sure it's the same in America. I actually worked with the Americans for a couple of my deployments. But, you know, one of the first things they teach you is how to prepare your uniform and how to prepare your bunk and how to store your kit. And there's always some, at my time, there were some guys, but I'm sure now guys and girls, who just did not grasp the concept of just do it properly for the first time, because otherwise your life is going to be miserable. And then every day the drill sergeant would come round, look at everybody's kit, and anybody's that wasn't perfect, they'd just pick it up, they'd throw it out the window, they'd take it in the shower and hose it down. They'd do whatever they wanted to do to make that person's life a misery. And what you saw very quickly was there was this immediate split of those people. I'd like to think I was one of them who decided, I cannot be bothered with that at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm just going to do it properly. And then I don't have to deal with all of that. They'll still catch you out, by the way. That's the whole point, right? They're always going to catch you out. But you just do your best. And there are other people that had to deal with it day in and day out and day in and day out until they cracked and said, no, this is not for me anymore. So you learn that you're part of a system. You can't beat the system. I talked about the deck of cards before. You've got a big influence over your deck of cards. I just find that life is all about being part of a system that you cannot beat. So if you want to sit at home playing FIFA every night, like I say, have McDonald's every morning, sit in the pub once you've finished FIFA celebrating your success, that's the system that you want to play. You're not going to win. By the age of 60, you won't win.
But we can't beat the system even if we go to the gym. And
no, you can't beat the system, but you're playing the system to your best advantage, right?
And what happens when we do that?
You are more likely, I think, to live a happy, healthy and prosperous life. You know, we've talked about the deck of cards. Everybody's given a fixed deck of cards, but you can influence the odds of how you're going to play that hand, right? So sadly, we live in a world where people get cancer and people die, or people have heart attacks and people die. And I firmly believe that when your time is up, it's up, and that's going to be the end of the road. But, you know, there's so much evidence now, physical, mental, about how you can influence whether you are more likely to get cancer or not. We just know that, right? You are more likely to get cancer if you smoke. Now, there are some people out there who smoke cigarettes and say, well, I'm not going to get cancer. Well, they are stupid, right? They're stupid because they are more likely to get cancer. And really, every part of your life will have an influence on what the outcome is going to be later down the life. You'll notice I say outcome. I didn't say your health because it's not just about health, right? It's about quality of life. It's about success at success in your chosen career. You know, I work in an environment where, in like the hospital environment, where most of the senior doctors that you kind of form a respect for have found a good balance in life. You know, they work hard. They don't necessarily get paid lots of money in the public hospitals here, but they have outside interests. They have family life. They do a bit of exercise. You'll see them on the heath going for a run after the shift or before their shift. And it's not universal. It's not everybody, but for some you'll see.
So going to the gym impacts us more in our life pursuit than you would actually say physically. It's more of a sort of metaphor. Is that what you're trying to say?
So yeah. Like,
it's because the way I'm looking at it from what you're saying is that the gym of improving ourselves physically, there's that great aspect to it, and that's connected to us improving our mental health. But the sole action of going to the gym just represents that we're prioritizing our pursuit in life.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at it from a professional perspective, if you had two candidates applying for the same job who were had exactly the same names, exactly the same age, exactly the same hobbies, and exactly the same grades, except one had a certificate that said, this is my certificate to say that I've been to the gym twice a week, every week for the last 50 weeks of the year. And the other person didn't have that certificate. As an employer, which one are you more likely to go for? It's almost irrational, right? Because they've got the same grades. But which one would you go for?
Well, the one that works out.
But why? What qualities would you see in that person that you the other person hasn't been able to demonstrate?
Well, it's just a representation of
discipline.
Well, it's obvious. It is obvious. It's the fact that you are making a small sacrifice for a greater cause. Mm-hmm. It is the discipline in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, are you arguably is that person who shows that certificate demonstrating they've been able to commit to something? You know, a lot of people talk about the benefits of degrees or not having a degree. You know, in this country now, you can do an apprenticeship and there's lots of different things that you can do. But if you put two like-for-like candidates together and one person's got a degree and one person's got a qualification of a differing sort, I think most employers may look at the degree as a bigger statement that that person has been able to commit to a project for 3 years and see it through till the end. So it's not just about the physical things. And, you know, one thing we haven't talked about is mental health. It's not my area of expertise, but I do know that I feel better, perform better, and cope with problems better if I've trained. And I notice that on those occasions where training hasn't been possible or for whatever reason, the diary hasn't allowed me to do the things that I know are good for me, I know that those days are tougher. I know that when I'm faced with a decision, I'm less decisive. I know that I don't feel great at the end of the day. So and I'm sure there's a million podcasts out there, maybe 10 million on the benefits of exercise on mental health. But yesterday I was working with a chap. His only form of exercise, other than he's a pretty healthy guy, he's probably in his mid-50s. His only form of exercise is every day he goes to Hampstead Heath and he does cold water swimming. And I said, how long is the cold water swimming? And he said, it depends on the water temperature. So I said, well, how cold does the water get? He said, like 1 degree. And I said, well, how long do you swim for 1 degree? He said, about 1 minute. And I said, well, that's your form of exercise, 1 minute in cold water. He said, yep, that's it. That's my routine. And in the summer, I'll swim more. In the winter, I'll swim less. But every day I go down to the ponds, I put my swimwear on, and I get into a frozen lake.
And I think what most people, when they start the gym, is that they're scared of embarrassing themselves in the gym. They're scared of, well, I don't know what to do in the gym. I've never been here.
Yeah.
But what you just said, I like that, because tell me if I'm wrong, but a shit workout is better than no workout. Yeah. Shit workout is better than nothing.
I mean, look, we all love a catchphrase. The one thing I say to my clients, you know, if they turn up a bit late, which I detest, like, I hate it when people turn up late.
I've done that a few times, I can't lie.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, now I have a new rule. For every minute that clients are late, they do one burpee.
All right, thank God I wasn't there when you made that rule.
So, but what were we saying? So, so the only thing that I say to clients is, the only thing to bear in mind is, the only bad workout is the one that didn't happen.
Mm.
Because even if you just got yourself out of bed and you went to the gym and you did one set of bench and one set of triceps, like, you've still done it right. And remember, let's not focus on the negatives. Let's not focus on the fact that you didn't do flies and you didn't do split ropes and you didn't do this, that, and the other. Let's just focus. Well, I did a set of bench. I did a better set of triceps. It's better than nothing.
Yeah.
I've achieved something there.
All right. Just to follow on quickly.
Yeah.
You walk into the gym.
Yeah.
You can do 5 exercises.
Yeah.
Only. What 5 exercises are you doing?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Well, you will probably know my number one choice. My number one choice is always burpees. I love burpees. And I think the harder you can make the burpee, the better. So if you can put some dumbbells in it and you do chest to floor burpees with dumbbells, you're going to become a lean, mean fighting machine. Mm. There's no doubt about that. So burpees would be number one. Plank would always be number two. Just think about the simplicity of a plank, but yet how difficult you can make it. Just walk your feet back 2 inches and you'll turn it from a plank to a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah? So an easy plank becomes a nightmare by moving your body 2 inches.
How many sets?
Let's keep it standard.
Yeah.
Let's keep it standard. Three sets. Three sets. Nice. Although, you know, my kind of psyche in life is to move away from sets and work for time, because time allows you to improve.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you do 10 burpees, how many burpees have you done?
10.
Right. If you do a minute burpees, how many burpees have you done today?
Oh, gotcha. Maybe like 22. I don't know.
Right. And if you did a minute burpees tomorrow, how many could you go for?
An extra 2.
Exactly. So time always allows you to progress, whereas reps doesn't. When you're doing body weight, because you're not...
Body weight. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So my 2 favorite body weight exercises are burpees, plank. And then I think... one of the research projects that was done on blue zones, which is these areas where people live to a ripe old age, identified that in many of the areas, there was one exception, people lived in very hilly areas. So they were using their legs a lot more than in other areas. And, you know, in the morning, they'd get up at the house at the bottom of the hill and they'd walk to the top of the hill to go to work. So they were using their glutes. And there's loads of research to suggest that the stronger your glutes are as you go into older life, the more likely you are to be able to live and perform your daily functions without falling and breaking your hip, which will probably lead ultimately to your demise. So I think my 3 top bodyweight exercises are burpees, plank and squats or squat jumps, and a minute of each, plank being the only one that is a consistent exercise. The other ones you can increase your reps. So my 2 weighted moves, I'm all about the deadlift. I think it's so good for your lower back, your glutes, and it's one that everybody, once you master the technique, can do and do well. And then a slightly more complex move, probably one of the harder ones, would be either a barbell or dumbbell clean and press. If you're not sure what it is, Google it, YouTube it, or look at some of the CrossFit videos, because CrossFit love a good clean and press. And can you imagine if every day you just dedicated 10 minutes to doing some burpees, a plank, some squats, some deadlifts and some clean and press? You did 5 minutes in total and then you did it twice, just do 10 minutes every day. Can you imagine over a lifetime what that would yield?
Yeah, that's the difficult part, isn't it? Because in the first month, you don't see that much progress as you want. But like you said before, once we increase the time frame, that's where the gains truly come in, right?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I have to say, for young men of your kind of age and what you want to achieve, getting in the gym and doing your weightlifting is important. Most of my workouts with people who are slightly older and doesn't involve loads of weights anymore. We really work on body weight stuff. I find that the clients can manage it a lot better. They're less likely to get injured. And the stuff that they can take away and use forever everywhere. And for those people that are struggling with gym, struggling with motivation, my top tip, if you can't afford a trainer, is go and join somewhere that does classes.
A what?
Classes.
Or just any class.
Go and join somewhere that does classes. Sign up to a class and go and do it. Meet some other people. It really works well for people like me that are competitive. I love being in a class where there's somebody better than me next to me. Mm. It pisses me off, right? It forces me. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here, but it forces you to push yourself that 1% harder than you would have done if there was somebody next to you who wasn't as good as you.
Mm.
So put yourself around people that you know, I said set yourself up for success, not for failure. Put yourself around people that are better than you. You'll always work a bit harder, achieve a bit more.
Love that. Love that, Ryan. Now, to end it off, I've done this with all my guests.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
You can get as deep as you want.
Okay.
What is the best advice you've ever been given? Think about it.
Yeah, that's a good one. We'll pause there for a second while I think the best. Somebody gave me some advice a long time ago when I wasn't sure, and this wasn't fitness related, but I wasn't sure whether there was a career option and pathway that I would be successful at, and that I would necessarily even be able to get into. And this very wise man who was super religious, had a big beard and the whole, you know, he just like looked at me and he went, just go for it. If it's meant to be, it will be. And really, it was almost like a snapshot of the old Nike advert that you'll remember that said, just do it. Just do it. You know, life, we can spend far too much time thinking about things. Just get out there and do it. So if you're going to make a commitment to say, right, I'm going to listen to Ryan's advice and I'm going to do burpees, planks, squats, deadlift and clean and press every time I go to the gym as part of my routine, just get on and do it. Don't give it too much thought. Don't overthink things. Just get out there and do it.
And if you really want to do it, there's not going to be any excuses, are there?
No, we started this podcast off and I used the word excuse, right? The people that make excuses will never achieve their full potential. That is just human nature, right? Don't make excuses. If you know you are meant to be going to the gym today because it's your routine to go to the gym, don't make an excuse not to go. Get yourself there, get it done. If you know you're meant to be having chicken and rice tonight because that's part of your nutritional plan or what you want to be doing, don't make an excuse and end up going for pizza. Stick to your plan and just do it.
Love it, Ryan. Okay. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.